my daughter. Nurse, good Angelica, call her forth to me. Now by my maidenhead, at 12-year-old, I bade her come. What lamb? What ladybird? God forbid, where is this girl? What Juliet?
How now? Who calls?
Your mother.
Hi, and welcome to Go See a Show, the Off-Off-Broadway podcast. I'm your host, Robert Gagneau. Thanks for coming back after a one-week hiatus for the podcast. Before we get to this week's guests, some good news. You can now get Go See a Show via iTunes. The link is on the homepage of GoSeeAShowPodcast.com, or just go to iTunes and search Go See a Show! ! In the podcast section. No official logo yet, but it's on the way, I promise. The podcast started out this week with a short clip you might recognize as the nurse scene from Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, but this particular performance of the scene includes a little something extra. We'll fast forward a little bit.
Does it fall upon thy face? Thou will fall backward when thou hast more wit. Wilt thou not, Jewel? And by my holy dame, the pretty wretch left crying and said I.
No, there are so many lovely references in this piece. It's really hard to know where to begin, but let's start with one of the more familiar images, like Mary in the Gospel. Juliet is coming up to her 14th year, and the nurse talks about what happened when she was 3 years old, when she was weaned. You will see the nurse gives Juliet a lily. The lily, of course, is a...
For an explanation of, well, why we're hearing an explanation of the nurse scene in the scene, I turn to my guests for this episode of the podcast.
Just so I have it for the top of the podcast, can you introduce yourselves?
Yes, of course. I'm John Hudson, Artistic Director of the Dark Lady Players.
And I'm Alexandra Cohen-Spiegler, one of the actresses in Dark Lady Players.
I personally have not yet had the opportunity to see a production from the Dark Lady Players, so I began by asking John and Alex what they'd like to share about their work.
You might want to sort of talk about, I mean, our unique approach to Shakespeare, which is very unusual.
Definitely. That sounds great. Let's start there.
Okay, great.
And can you remind me of the name of the show one more time?
Well, the show that is just opening tomorrow is called Shakespeare's Gospel Parodies, a medieval mystery tour. And it's taking place at West Park Church on the Upper West Side on the corner of 86th Street and Amsterdam in a church that has been empty for a number of years and in which the Woodshed Collective have installed a number of Parisian apartments. And we are working on their sets on the 3 days a week that they're not using them. Our approach to what we're doing is to not perform the Shakespearean plays in the way that is normally understood, but to perform the underlying allegorical meanings of those plays. Elizabethan literature and a number of Elizabethan plays were written using allegory and have multiple allegorical levels, which traditional productions of Shakespeare ignore completely, although they are dealt with to some extent by scholars. And our work, which is why it's so very time intensive, is to find ways of bringing those meanings to life on stage. And it turns out that many of those meanings are very radical religious meanings and indeed anti-Christian parodies, which raises profound questions about how anti-Christian parodies could have got into the Shakespearean plays. So, for example, one piece is that we're doing in this production is the death of Bottom Pyramus from Midsummer Night's Dream. Now, that piece begins with the word passion and ends with the word passion, which is a particular rhetorical structure called an envelope. And inside that envelope, the light disappears, there's a stabbing in the side, and there's a reference to dice playing, with all of which come from the account of the passion story, the death of Christ. So this turns out to be a little comic depiction of Jesus getting re-crucified again. It's very black comedy.
With Bottom as Jesus.
Yes, because Pyramus and Thisbe, and Bottom is playing Pyramus. Pyramus and Thisbe are a standard medieval trope for Jesus and the church. And they're used in at least a dozen places in Renaissance literature.
Huh. So with this particular production, you're approaching several different allegories between several different plays, correct?
Yes, what we've done in the past, we began in 2006 by doing, in fact, the production of Midsummer Night's Dream, and since then we did two productions of As You Like It. We did a production of the Allegories in Hamlet, which in which Alex played Hamlet. You might want to ask her about that.
You know, there seems to be this theme with Go See a Show has run into a theme of gender bending Shakespeare, which is great.
Huh.
It's really fun.
Yeah, well, we don't particularly do gender bending just for the hell of it, but in the Elizabethan stage, you used to have companies that were all male. But there were no women on the Elizabethan stage, and we basically took the opposite approach initially and had an all women company, although we do from time to time have men in it.
And this is the first time in several years that we actually are having men in the company.
Yes, yes. But when you're trying to actually convey multiple allegories, so for example, a character has not only to convey the surface identity of that character, but perhaps three or four other identities as well, you don't want to get messed up on issues of what gender they are. That really falls away if you're saying that Hamlet is really an allegory for Lucifer, or that Ophelia is an allegory for the Virgin Mary. You actually see something that's more important than the issue of gender.
You don't find that gender bending the role gets in the way? That's what you're saying? It doesn't get in the way? It just kind of becomes immaterial?
It makes it easier.
Really?
It makes it easier because it takes it out of the equation.
Interesting.
It's like, we're not dealing with that. That's just not relevant. For example,
I was going to say, it also reminds the audience that we're not putting on a production based in realism.
Yes.
You know, our costumes often refer more to the allegorical identities than they do to the surface play. So, for instance, for Hamlet, because Hamlet is one of Hamlet's allegorical identities is Lucifer, I had devil horns on when playing Hamlet. Now, would you ever do a straight production of Hamlet with devil horns on? No, but that sort of draws the audience out of the surface text and the surface story and keeps them in the allegory, keeps them remembering that there's something else going on.
Yes, because Elizabethan literature was written in order to have one meaning on the honeyed surface of the verse, but for the wiser sort, they would digest the allegory. And that's standard Elizabethan literary theory. And the more educated members of the audience would be sitting there trying to puzzle out what was actually going on underneath.
But there was still that body obviousness that stuck out for everyone.
Everyone would see the common surface, of course, but those who were smarter and who actually could understand the allusions would actually see beyond that. For example, there are 3,000 different religious references in the Shakespearean plays, and they exist to create complex allegorical systems. The author took source texts, took religious references out of the source text and put in a whole swathe of new religious references. And they did so in order to create these religious parodies, such as the one in Hamlet, which we are actually doing, and Alex was just talking about, in which we see Hamlet as the Antichrist inseminating the Virgin Mary in the character of Ophelia, doing so through the light of his eyes as Lucifer, the Archangel of Light.
Alex, could you talk a little bit about your experience playing Hamlet as a woman?
Sure. Well, what's interesting about the work that Dark Lady Players does is that the struggle of playing Hamlet had, for me in our production, had very little to do with the fact that I'm a woman, just because there was so much other, so many other issues to keep in mind, such as the fact that Hamlet's an allegory for various forms of the Antichrist and the devil. So that more what I was thinking about was, how do I play the Antichrist and still justify saying Hamlet's lines as the Antichrist.
So maybe an even more interesting question is, how was it playing the Antichrist?
It was really fun. At one of the first rehearsals, as we were waiting for everyone to arrive, I pulled aside Jenny, our director, and John, our artistic director, dramaturg, and I said, okay, I have a question. Am I Hamlet playing the Antichrist, or am I the Antichrist playing Hamlet, or am I Hamlet who is the Antichrist, or Alex who's playing the Antichrist, who's playing Hamlet? You know, what combination of all of these identities am I? And I believe that John's answer was yes. which we then were able to shorten down to say, okay, this is the Antichrist, and he just happens to be saying the words that are written for Hamlet. So for me, it was about taking these words that, you know, are so much in our vernacular and turning many of them on their head so that, for instance, in the famous Get Thee to a Nunnery scene, which is always played as Hamlet really castigating Ophelia for, you know, being a woman and possibly having an affair with him and all of that, it became a joyful seduction scene. At one point, Hamlet says to her, "Wouldst thou be a breeder of sinners? I am myself indifferent, honest, but I could accuse me of such things that it were better my mother had not borne me." So turning that on its head from how it's traditionally interpreted for the Antichrist to say to a woman, "Wouldst thou be a breeder of sinners?" That's one of the most exciting offers that he can make.
Wow. I'm very interested. I wish I had seen this production because now I'm interested to see how Ophelia would react to that.
Well, you can actually see that.
She was disturbed.
But you can actually see that scene because we actually are using that scene as one of the nine scenes in Shakespeare's Gospel Parodies.
Oh, great.
Opening
scene.
So, with these, in heightening the allegorical nature of the plays, do you find with audiences that you have folks who are resistant to that, or and how do you address that?
Well,
we have a lot of resistance.
Yes, yeah. I mean, what we're doing is not for everybody. I mean, it was not for everybody on the Elizabethan stage either. Then, you might say that only like 10% of the audience were educated enough to understand the classical references and the Roman historical references and the Italian references and so on and so on. Today, when people are no longer trained in Renaissance music or Roman history or the classics, the number of people who can actually understand what these plays are actually doing is very small indeed. And those are the people we want as audiences.
Well, it sounds like you're also shining a light on what those plays could be about for the people who may have missed it when they saw, you know, just, for example, a production of not to make it sound diminutive, but like any old production of Midsummer Night's Dream, they might have missed that. But if they come to yours, perhaps they'll see that part of it. And the next time they go to any old production of Midsummer, they can layer that on top.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Having seen sort of this approach to the work, any time that I see any, you know, including a traditional production of Shakespeare or even just, you know, read a sonnet or something, it's as if you have a different pair of glasses on and you're seeing sort of both sides at the same time. It's like if you watch, you know, a Disney cartoon as an adult and you think, oh, there are all these jokes that I just never got before because I didn't get the references. It's the same kind of parallel way of viewing something you know so well and then seeing it in a totally different light.
I mean, I tend to think of them like presents. Like you have a present and it's sort of wrapped up in a layer of paper or something, and underneath is the real thing. So there's this sort of this layer that you take off in order to understand what the thing was actually written for, what's underneath that.
So you're really teaching Shakespeare in many ways.
Yeah, and it's very much in the mode of educational theatre, in that we want people to understand what we think and what scholars think that these plays actually are. We are not interested in doing, you know, the 500,000th production of a standard version of the Midsummer Night's Dream. Why bother? What we're interested in doing is something radically new that says, let's show what this play really is about.
So I want to switch off of the creative aspect of this, because this, the Go See a Show podcast is about creating theater in the off-Broadway community. And a large part of what we do is, sadly, struggle to find money and resources to create the things that we really want to make. Or at least I've run into that many times, and I know lots of folks who've run into that.
We do too, certainly. And
something that really caught my attention when I was reading about your show was that you were doing this for free.
Yes.
That's congratulations. That's excellent. It's just so exciting. I love that theater is given away for free, because it really, art should be public as much as possible. But I wanted to ask you, what are the challenges that went into that? Why that decision? And how are you able to make it work?
Well, we are able to make it work by having very, very low cost productions. We got a small grant from Art New York for this, and we got a little more money from another foundation. And we basically arranged to trade services in order to get the space. So we didn't actually have to pay for the space. We got it as a result of making other trades. So
barter system.
Since space is the major constraint, I mean, you know, this is a 17,000 square foot building. The main sanctuary has a fantastic acoustics. It seats 500 people. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we couldn't afford something like that.
Right.
You know, if we work in a theatre, we will rent like a small 70 seat black box. But here, we were able to make sort of various trades and arrangements, including arranging for Woodshed to come in and do what they're doing and clear out the building, so that we were able to get the space free of charge. And having the space free of charge, and because we have extremely low budgets, and because it's essentially a non-equity production, and we're just paying showcase stipends, we are able to do that.
Congratulations. It's so wonderful to hear that folks are giving theater away, which is how it should be, and that you're keeping costs down so that you can do that.
Absolutely. I mean, I would say, you know, if you want wonderful scenery and want to see stagehands moving scenery around, well, don't come to us, because we don't have any. Very often, our productions, you know, use deliberately rough pieces of cloth, you know, unfinished. They're not costumes. Now, in this production, we happen to have an excellent costume designer, so we have really, really beautiful costumes created by Elizabeth Weitzen, who, in fact, also did the costumes for Ampersand, Romeo and Juliet recently.
The very first Go See a Show podcast. Ampersand. Yep.
So she was costume designer there. She was costume designer for us, and she's, I think, an up and coming and really truly excellent and brilliant costume designer. So in this particular case, we did actually have really spend money on costumes, but we were able to do that because we weren't being charged for the space, and that made it possible.
Excellent. So where can folks learn more about the gospel parodies, and where can they reserve tickets and learn more about Dark Lady?
Well, you could go to www.darkladyplayers.com, and from there, just bring it up, click on the homepage, and that takes you to our current production. Just click on the on the icon of the theatre, and it takes you to the Gospel Parodies homepage, and you can go at the bottom of the page to Facebook, and that gives you a sort of a blow-by-blow example of what's going on, including, for example, this evening I posted like a little three-minute piece of a scene of the Romeo and Juliet parody that we're doing, and I pasted like nine photos of the individual scenes. So there's a lot of very rich material on the Facebook page. So go to the Dark Lady Players homepage and then to the Facebook page. And as for tickets, it is free and it's really first come, first served. So just be there at either 4 p.m. on a Sunday or 7 p.m. on a Monday or a Tuesday up to the 25th of September, and then we'll let you in.
Excellent.
One of the great things about performing in this huge church is that it's huge. you know, so even if a tour group of 20 people comes in, that's fine. The sanctuary, I think, can sit 500, I believe. So, you know, there's none of the dangers of a typical black box that, you know, will overflow the last performance.
Great. So bring your friends by the busload.
Yeah.
I love
and
it.
And it's free.
bring people who are interested in Shakespeare. That's what we want.
Great.
Interested in the plays.
John and Alex, thank you so much for doing the podcast with me.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And thanks to you for listening in. You've got two more chances to catch Shakespeare's Gospel Parodies, including Tuesday, September 20th at 7 p.m., and this Sunday, September 25th at 4 p.m. More info at darkladyplayers.com. Every week, Go See a Show features an interview with a theater artist working in New York's off-off-Broadway community, so I hope you'll come back for more next week. And please, as always, send all comments, questions, praise, or complaints, as well as suggestions for future podcasts, to Robbie, that's R-O-B-B-Y, at goseeashowpodcast.com. Until next time, go see a show.
Thanks a lot, you two, and I will let you know when it's posted. Have a good night, y'all.
You too.
You too. Bye.
Ciao.